Not so long ago, people who regularly discussed the accelerating movement for global government were dismissed immediately as alarmists, and even worse. My, how the times have changed. Global government is now the darling of the enlightened among us. Organizations that seek global unity, peace, and collaboration seem to spring up by the dozens yearly. There is a very impressive list of well-known, wealthy, and famous people who are now advocates of open borders, the elimination of the laws of sovereign nations, and the right of the Earth's inhabitants to migrate to wherever they desire without interference. What is often not reported on is the underlying New Age spirituality that permeates most of these global organizations. Many Christians rightly question these movements and their beliefs about the future of mankind. Unfortunately, though, there is a large number of Christians that are joining forces with these globalists who are attempting to create a utopia right here on Earth. Stay tuned for my conversation with author and researcher Carl Teichrube about globalism and much more in this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Remember that your failure to be informed does not make me a wacko.
The time has come, the walrus said. You talk of other things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax and cabbages and kings.
My mind doesn't work that way. I got this real moron thing I do. It's called thinking. And I'm not a very good American because I like to form my own opinions. I have certain rules I live by. My first rule, I don't believe anything the government tells me. And I don't take very seriously the media or the press in this country.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Hello, and welcome to Soaring Eagle Radio. Your host is Mike Spaulding. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged as you consider today's news and Mike's commentary from a biblical perspective. Now, let's join Mike.
Hi, folks. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Soaring Eagle Radio. You can listen to us on all the normal spots, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, SoaringEagleRadio.com. We're on Global Radio Network, GSRadio.net, Worldview Weekend Radio, Talk America Radio, and a lot of other platforms. Check us out there. I am so blessed and pleased to welcome back my good friend Carl Teichrube to Soaring Eagle Radio. Welcome, Carl.
Mike, it's good to be back on with you. It's good to hear your voice.
Well, thank you, brother. It's good to have you back on and chat. I'm always impressed with the research that that you provide for the body of Christ. And the book that you're working on right now, Game of Gods, is, and I don't want to misspeak, Carl, but this book, folks, when it comes out, you'll see it because it'll be on my website. I'll blast it out to everybody. But this book that you're writing, you've blessed me as a friend to be able to read some of it and preview it. And I've got to tell you, this book is going to be a great resource for people that are trying to understand globalism as it exists today. And so give us an update, Carl. Where are you at with the book?
Well, I'm about 85% done. It seems that the last 15% just takes forever to wrap up. Wow. Well, it's like that with any project, though, isn't it, Mike?
I mean, it is.
You know, the first while, the first 20, 25%, you're on there, it's hot, and you just go, and it kind of just flows out. The next third or so is banging your head on the wall a little bit more. it takes a little more time, but there's still some flow. There's still stuff going on. It's still exciting. And it's exciting to pull together the last 15 or 20% too, but this is where things get picky, really. where you have to really take your time to go through everything with a fine tooth. And that's I've been doing that all along the way to some extent, but now it's really digging into those the finer details of the book to make sure that what you're saying is accurate and you're able to put things forward in a way that's understandable. And when you're dealing with big topics, and I mean, Mike, this is a big topic, a huge topic. When you're dealing with a topic of this nature and this size, it's hard sometimes to pull it down to a level that where you're able to really work through the core of the topic, the core of the subject, without either in rabbit trail or facts. Interesting, really interesting. But detracts from the main pull of the book.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it, Carl. Because the subject of Game of Gods is really globalism. What the Book of Revelation talks about, a one world government, one world. Religion; those two things are merging together, and you give a great outline and detail, and really a historical overview of where all of this has started. You've attended a lot of different world meetings, groups that consider themselves representative of the world's population. Where have you been most recently?
Oh, golly. I've focused more on the cultural element of what it means to be one world or to have this idea of a global citizenship mindset or an attitude. And so 2017, because we're taping this right now in early 2018, but 2017, I managed to go to Burning Man. That was an experience, let me tell you. I went to a regional Burning Man event in Western Canada, and then I attended Paganicon, which was a gathering of about 600 Wiccans, heathens, and other neo-pagans for a weekend. Of for myself, watching them do their rituals, interacting with them in their workshops, listening to their lectures, and just trying to get a handle on the rise of neo-paganism. All of these things do connect. They all come together in some way, shape, or form. Really, where you have the thread of commonality is that man is attempting to be our own god. We are attempting to be our own declared masters, and we do that collectively. We do that through politics. That's why one of the chapters in my book is entitled "The Cult of World Order," because it is a cult. It seeks to form some type of a savior, messianic kind of an element, and so you can view politics at that level as having a spiritually integrated worldview. You also have things like paganism, things like interfaithism, so many other things that look like they are independent, but as you start peeling it back, as you start unpacking it all, you realize that there's a commonality through all of this, and that's mankind looking to assert himself and declare himself as his own master. We're playing games of gods, and in so doing, we want to build a temple to ourselves. We are building our temple of man, and we want to find the mystery and wonder in the universe within creation and not creator. It all ties back together that way.
Yeah, and I think that's a very profound synopsis of the title of the book and the content as well. And just for our listeners' sake, Carl, you mentioned something, and I want to make sure that they grasped this, because you said that you were at an event called Paganicon. Is that what it was, sir?
That's right. Yeah, Paganicon.
Yeah. And so you mentioned pagans, and some folks may think, well, pagans, they don't have a belief system. They're not spiritual, and that couldn't be further from the truth.
Oh, no kidding. I mean, my goodness. This wasn't the only pagan event I've been to. I've been to others in the past, but this was the most recent, and I hadn't been to one like a real, I guess the lack of a better way of saying it, a really hardcore pagan gathering, because that's what these were. These were dedicated, very, very focused in their pagan religious worldview. And it is an eclectic religious movement. It's very, it has a very thin, kind of a thinness to it. It's like water spread out everywhere. It touches all kinds of stuff, but it isn't necessarily really deep, but it goes everywhere. And so you're able to see so many different elements coming together at Paganicon. You had neo-pagans, you had druids, you had people from voodooism, lots of Wiccans. Lots and lots of Wiccans, various other Wiccan groups. Not all witchcraft is of the same variety. There are a number of different schools of Wiccanism and witchcraft, Gardarian witchcraft. So there was a real mix of within the pagan community, and a lot of heathens, a lot of Germanic, Nordic heathenism, which is a religious worldview in its own right. Sometimes we use the word heathen just in a very generic way, but it's actually, being a heathen is very specific. There's specific gods and goddesses you worship. There's very specific orders and arrangements to what you believe. And so Paganicon was a blending of all of these, which is really unique in the pagan world, because paganism, if you're part of, let's say, one particular school of thought, you don't usually interact a lot with somebody else that's in a different school of thought, though there's such a large pagan community in the upper Midwest that they end up oftentimes crossing paths with each other. Just to give you a sense of how large the pagan community is in just the Minneapolis-St. Paul and Minnesota area, there's approximately, I know there's over 300, but approximately 300 circles and covens that meet regularly in Minneapolis, mostly in the Twin Cities region.
Wow, over 300.
That's right.
That seems like a huge number in a small geographic region.
That they consider their own part of the world, Paganicon. Now, pardon me, Paganistan. And this, going into this event, for myself, I wasn't sure why it was called Paganicon. I thought it was Pagan Icon, because that's how it was spelled, Pagan and then ICO. That would make sense, because an icon is a symbol. It would fit, hey? But I was told, no, it's Paganicon. I'm like, okay, what does that mean? And so this is from one of the organizers, and the organizer said, well, it's obvious you're not from here. You're from elsewhere. And I said, yeah, I'm from Canada. And he says, well, you need to understand the pagan community in the upper, we are such a vibrant part of the Twin Cities region. But he says all the way into Western Wisconsin, we have a very large pagan presence in this region, large enough that we call our region Paganistan, as in Afghanistan, Pakistan. The idea, this is our near homeland. And so he said, this is the conference or the convention, the con of Paganistan. So it's Paganicon.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah, that is.
And he's right. I mean, the pagan community has really, really risen in terms of its numbers, in terms of its influence, in terms of what it now brings to the table, and in terms of its footprint within the community, especially in the Minneapolis-St. Paul region, but not just there, all over the Midwest. In fact, all over North America, paganism has really risen as a religious movement. This is what I would call large P paganism. That is the religious expression of the pagan worldview. Most people, Mike, I think hold to what we would call a small P pagan worldview. And by small P, they have no real religious thought or no real religious thinking that's gone into it, but they're accepting, whether they realize it or not, a pagan definition or a pagan, and that is the belief that man, nature, and God are all essentially the same. It's all one. We're all oneness. We're all pushing toward oneness. Now, being pagan, that really truly is the pagan worldview, that there is no real God outside of creation, that God is not distinct, God is not separate, God is not unique. We're all God. Nature is God. There's a force called God. God is in everything. That really, when it boils straight down to it, is a pagan worldview. So this is small P paganism I talk about a lot in my book, and large P paganism, the religious element, because there is that very definite voice, and it's a growing voice. And that's one of the reasons why this event in Minneapolis is actually not even unique There are some very large pagan gatherings across the Midwest. Ohio has a number of pagan gatherings. Illinois. In fact, the Midwest, Ohio, all the way across to Wisconsin and Minneapolis, there's a lot of pagan festivals, a lot of pagan gatherings. Pagan Spirit Gathering is one. Starwood is another. Some of these have been around since the 1980s. Sacred Harvest Festival. These are some pretty substantial events. In fact, I believe Pagan Spirit Gathering and Starwood they kind of are the flagships of pagan festival culture, and it's, you know, they stem out of the Ohio Illinois region.
Skipping Indiana,
but yeah, Ohio actually has and you're from Ohio, so yes, you'd understand. Yeah. Ohio has a very strong pagan presence.
Wow. Well, I'm going to have to do some research on that myself, Carl. Maybe talk to you offline and get some information.
Oh, for sure.
Get some information on these. I may have to drop in and visit one or two just to get an understanding close up firsthand about what's happening right here where I live.
Right.
So, Carl, one of the things that I was hoping we would talk about is in the midst of all of this globalism, trying to develop and build a one world government, a utopian dream, if you will, is something called technocracy. Now, that's something that you and a couple of others were talking about decades ago, actually. You were talking about this, I believe, back in the 90s, late 90s, technocracy, and I think that it is hand in glove with globalism. In fact, it's one of the driving forces of globalism is technocracy. So I wonder if you would talk just a little bit about that, and then I want to go into a couple of chapters on your book, if that's okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, technocracy, I have to give him Putwood credit. He's one guy that's done so much in terms of understanding the technocratic worldview. And Patwood and myself, we were already dovetailing on what technocracy looked like. Oh, golly, this goes back to the early 2000s. We were doing some research back and forth and throwing around some ideas. I think maybe 2003, 2004, somewhere in that neighborhood. Technocracy is the concept that what we need to have is an efficient, managed, systems-based society where engineers more or less run and rule how civilization should operate. What's fascinating is you can see how this now can dovetail with intelligence. How about let's get rid of the engineers completely? If we want a truly efficient, a truly pragmatic system, allow AI to be our next directors or our next, you know, the next engineers of how society should look. But I do talk about technocracy in my book. I do mention technocracy on a number of occasions and kind of explore what that looks like. It comes out, you really see it coming out in the 1920s and 1930s with the concept of the efficient society. It fits hand in glove with socialism. It is a form of socialism in many respects. And there is this element that what we need is get rid of politicians. We don't even need politics. We just simply need the national system to be run smoothly and efficiently with people who are specialists.
Yes.
And who will be able to direct our nation in a way that is the most streamlined and will work, you know, it'll be the most pragmatically run, the most efficiently run machine ever, assuming humanity's a machine. And of course, that's part of the technocratic mindset is that everything is mechanical. We're living in a mechanical universe. Everything is ordered within a mathematical mechanical arrangement, but that's not true. We're not in a materialist mechanical world. Our reality isn't that. There's far more depth to the human experience, just being a cannibal, far more to the natural world than just you know, either randomly colliding or somehow being directed through, let's say, natural processes. There's way more going on. There's a depth to the human experience that goes far deeper than the technocratic ideal that everything can just be run like a smoothly oiled machine. We'll keep the trains running on time. It's more than just that. And of course, technocracy has this idea that what we can do is we can create a world order where everything will be smooth and run together in an integrated, systematic, a type of systems thinking or systems theory behind how we arrange our world. I do bring technocracy into play in the book because it is a part of that idea that we're going to play God. We're playing God with all the time. But here's the thing, Mike, what we end up playing God with is we play God with each other. We're always playing God with each other because we can't create out of nothing. We don't have the power to raise the dead. We don't have these things that make God who he is, that he is outside of time, outside of space, outside of creation. That's not us. We're inside of it completely. But we think that because we can order around parts and pieces of creation that somehow makes us godlike. That's crazy thinking. Yeah. No, thank you. That doesn't happen. That doesn't make you a god. So the only way that we really play God against each other is by controlling each other, and then ultimately by destroying each other. We're really, really good at that. We are so proficient at that. So even in terms of the worldview brought forward in my book, Game of Gods, I've got a section where I'm dealing with specifically with World War I and the technocratic thinking that emerged hand in glove with social Darwinism and how this is now just, the war is evolution. The war is this, the strongest will survive. We just took that and laid it over top of politics and over top of national aspirations. And so what the book does is really is a really large survey, a vast survey, a progressive timeline of how this game of gods is played out from technocracy to paganism to artificial intelligence and transhumanism to the cult of world order. As I take you in like the Parliament of, pardon me, to the United Nations Millennium Forum, which I was a part of. I was part of Subgroup 6, which is on restructuring world order, all the way to the religious side, like the Parliament of World Religions. And what looks at first like diverse topics and diverse ideas, as you go through the book, you realize that this core theme that we're playing God, we have these games of gods, we set them in motion. It is something you cannot escape. It is a part of our human makeup. And it stems all the way back to the Genesis 3 rebellion that man can determine in his own mind, in his own way, that he can, through special knowledge, be as God.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's a good way to state it, Carl. And let's talk about your book a little bit, and I'd like to focus specifically on chapter 10. And maybe we can get to 11 as well, but building Cosmopolis, I thought, wow, that's a great way to define man's bent on defying God and uniting the world under one banner, really building a modern-day Tower of Babel once again. Man's is striving to come together to unify all things, to systematize and to be able to control. That was a good way to put it, Carl, to control every aspect of every life. Is that what's going on?
That's what it boils down to. It boils down to this idea that we can manage, that we can control, and we are our own masters this way. Building Cosmopolis builds first on a little bit about some of my own experiences as I've went to different World Federalist events, and specifically in that chapter on what happened back in 1997 when I went to a World Federalist event. was sponsored by a couple of different World Federalist organizations in Chicago to talk about creating a global network of global cities. And this idea that cities are the ones who now have the power, the political power, to rule the world. It was really, really fascinating conference, a very small event, not a lot of people there, which has its own set of challenges, because then you can't really hide in the crowd.
Right.
And what was fascinating was of the people that were there, however, they almost all had some type of representation inside of a much larger organization pushing for international order. My chapter opens up with some of those experiences at that event, including when the organizer, bless him, said, I think we have an infiltrator, and more or less told me it was time to leave.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
You know? And I didn't play my cards maybe the best during that event, but
shouldn't have had your tape recorder out, huh?
You shouldn't have let him find my tape recorder. No kidding.
That's right.
But you know, one thing I want to say up front, Mike, is, and this is going to sound maybe a little bit crazy for some people in the Christian research community, I've met some really nice people at some of these events. I've met some folks. They really believe in what they're doing. They have. They don't see it as malicious. They don't see it as something that's going to damage. They really believe that they're doing the greater good. They really believe that they're doing something that's going to be beneficial for humanity. And I've met some of the nicest people at some of these conferences, at some of these events. That doesn't mean, though I recognize their nicety and their sincerity, I don't agree with their worldview. Not at all. In fact, I find the worldview very, very dangerous. Cannot escape the fact that these are some really nice, there's some really nice folks involved in this, because they believe in what they're doing, that what they're and that they are putting forward some system where we can save ourselves.
Yes.
And that's important, I think, sometimes for us as Christians to realize that these are people. These are human beings. And I've heard it said so many times in the Christian research community, hey, you know, that guy's a scoundrel, or you know, these guys are bad people, and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, some real negative stuff. And I'm like, hold on, you know, attack their world, not attack their worldview, but challenge their worldview, criticize their worldview. Absolutely. Let's be careful about attacking them as individuals, because they're people, they're your neighbors. I think it's really important that we keep that in mind.
Yeah, that's a great point, Carl. We cannot expect them to comprehend and to understand what they're doing within a context of Christian theism. They don't share
right.
our worldview, and so we should understand
right.
that going in. And I'm not saying that. I thought you stated it very well. They are people. They are our neighbors. And at the levels that you're visiting, and these organizations and the people that you're meeting, I'm convinced that many of them are very, very nice people, although we would define them as misunderstanding the implications of what it is that they're advocating for. But I do think we would run into some scoundrels if we went up higher into these movements and would be exposed to what was really going on. The things that we research, that you research and talk about, that might be a different story there. But the people that you're meeting, the people you're meeting is a very good point. We need to be open to conversation with them and sharing in a very kind conversation why we believe what we believe. I see it as a great opportunity.
Right. Oh, I do too. And sometimes you have to be careful. I mean, my goodness, I'm going to these events, I'm not going to witness. I'm going to research. I'm going to try to understand their worldview and where their agendas are. So I'm not going there to talk to them about Jesus Christ. However, Burning Man and a few other events like that, yes, we did have an evangelistic outreach. The Parliament of World Religions, yes, as part of seeing some of the evangelistic side coming out of that. And when you say they're scoundrels, Mike, I've run into them. I've run into a lot of them. I've rubbed shoulders with some very powerful, very influential people who have done some pretty nasty things, and they've got a nice smile on their face, And they've treated me very, very nicely, some of them. But at the same time, I have no illusions of the power and the potential and the capacity that these individuals have to make life very miserable for a lot of people. And I mean, my goodness, I've sat in rooms with everything from generals to spooks to some of the most powerful players on the planet. In the 1990s, I had the opportunity, late 1990s, of spending a little bit of time with Maurice Strong, who comes from my home province. And for anybody involved in looking into globalization, you run into his name fairly frequently, especially at the United Nations level. Yes. during that decade. So these are people who have power. These are people who are looking to exert power. That said, hey, they've bought me coffee. We've had some really good talks. I'll never forget. I had an interaction with a World Federalist member. This is back in Dallas, I think in 1999. We'd have breakfast every morning together for the space of our 3 or 4 day event. And just the two of us, and he was an elderly man. He was a high-ranking military official. He was retired from the military, but he had that background. And, you know, it was one of those times when I had an opportunity to talk to him about what's really going on here. He firmly believed that world government would be our only way of saving humanity. And I looked at him at one point. This is after like three breakfasts already. I said, you really think so? You really think that having a world political system is going to save us? What about this problem that we have of sin? And he looked at me, what do you mean sin? I don't believe in sin. And we ended up talking a little bit about sin. And when it was all said and done, he looked at me and said, well, maybe this idea of having a world authority isn't such a good idea. We'll never really be able to curb or control what is in our evil heart. Because it got to the point where he recognized that, yeah, we have a problem. It's a sin problem. Though he wouldn't acknowledge Jesus Christ, he recognized that there was a sin problem. Because he could see it just at a surface level when we started talking, start breaking things down into a way that was, there was some logical thought going into this conversation, to the point where the last working session that day, he stood up and in a very polite way denounced world federalism in front of everybody, to the point where I know one of the moderators was like, where is this coming from? Where is this coming from?
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
But all I had done, Mike, was ask some provocative questions. It was not a place where I was able to witness. That wasn't even the point of me going. But in an offhanded way, that ended up eventually happening with this individual. I don't know what happened to him, but it was interesting to see how his mind all of a sudden was changing. Because I said to him, I'm a Christian. I believe that we have this sin problem, and that it's not world federalism that's going to save us from ourselves. It's Jesus Christ.
Yes.
And he's like all gruff about it, like, oh yeah, it's just religious, blah blah blah. And, well, let's look at this thing logically. Let's actually talk about this rationally.
Yes.
So sometimes you're surprised by what happens. You really, really are. That story isn't in the book. There's a ton of stories that I don't share in the book, but at the same time, Mike, there's a lot of stuff in here that I do talk about where I'm interacting with people, and really Burning Man. When I went to Burning Man this last year with my friend Bob Worley, we ended up having some fantastic conversations with people who wanted to know about God, Jesus, what we believed, what we did. Mike was a little bit different. We put up a sign at our tent, and we had a sign up that said "Camp of the Unknown God." And so we had
that's great.
It was awesome. That's it was great. Awesome. We had people coming by. I mean, we had fantastic conversations. We had people coming by saying, who is this unknown God? And we're like, you got some time? Yeah. Well, come on over. What we did was, I realize I'm on a bunch of different rabbit trails here, Mike. Sorry. What we did was we would serve them drinks. We'd give them Gatorade. We'd make them some food. If it was early in the morning, we'd make them some coffee. And we'd talk, first of all, we'd ask them some questions. Where are you from? What do you believe? Is this your first burn, your second burn? What have you all been doing? Allow them to talk. Let them feel comfortable. At the same time, you're taking mental notes as to how they think and who they are. And you're getting to know them. This is becoming a personal thing. It's not just a random thing. It's a personal thing. And then eventually you get back around to the question. You say, hey, you know, when you stopped and looked at the sign, what were you thinking? What were your thoughts? And from that point, we would bring in a conversation of Jesus Christ. We'd make that very clear. We had some fantastic witnessing opportunities right there at the burn. And I know Bob has had some good interactions after the burn with some of these same people. It wasn't just research at that event. It was research plus looking for opportunities to share the good news of Jesus Christ. And so, yeah, when those opportunities come, you take them. You definitely take them. And so all along the way, Mike, I mean, we've had some amazing experiences. We share a lot of that in the book. But we want people to recognize that there is this common thread that runs through human history, that runs through every one of these diverse events and diverse settings that we've been talking about. And that is that there is this Genesis 3 reality that we cannot shake, that instead of shaking it, we try to create it. We try to play these games of gods instead of bending our knee to the one true God.
Yes. Amen. That's a good way to put it, Carl. Chapter 11, let's touch on this. I'd be remiss if we didn't. Chapter 11 is the cult of world order, and I just want to read a quote from Scott Nearing, because I think it really captures and it might crystallize in some of our listeners' thinking exactly what we're talking about today. World, and here's the quote: world crisis and world chaos cannot be successfully handled in the absence of world authority. And so there's a great many people today that believe that the only way that the world is ever going to experience peace, and it be a lasting peace where all peoples everywhere are living safely and securely, is if we have a world government in place that is directing all activities of subordinate governments around the world. That, as a Christian, is a frightening idea, Carl.
It is. It is. And you know something? This is not conspiracy theory. We're not talking about something that's shady and we can't put our finger on. We can actually trace this movement of world federalism and world government. We can trace this. We can monitor it. We can analyze it. If we're willing to do so in such a way that's not necessarily sensational, allow them to say the things that are sensational. Scott Nearing's quote is sensational, but it's also true. And that's why I have that in the book. And so that chapter 11, goes into world order as, number one, a political movement, but it's a political movement that ultimately has, you could call it, a quasi-messianic perspective. And that is the only way that humanity is going to save itself, is if we organize politically. We organize politically at a global level. This becomes in its own kind of religious phenomena. It's this idea that mankind's political goals and political achievements become basically the standard for everything. I'll give you just an example here. And I close that chapter with a quote from actress Jean Stapleton. You remember actress Jean Stapleton?
Yes.
She
yep.
was a quite a famous actress. Well, she was working with the World Federalist Association. This is already a number of years ago, alongside with John Denver, Walter Cronkite, Lloyd Bridges. These are names people know. And in one of the brochures that was being passed around when I was a part of that group, attending their meetings, one of the brochures, she had an endorsement. And this is what her endorsement said: the goal of the World Federalists is peace through unity of government. We must support their vision of oneness in diversity, for it is the salvation of humanity. Well, I'm sorry, Mike, if that's not a religious or quasi-messianic, right, salvific statement, I don't know what is.
Exactly.
It is the salvation of humanity? No.
Oh.
No, politics is not the salvation of humanity. My goodness, national politics, local politics, state politics, if you want to put on, give it some type of a messianic overtone, we would laugh at that. And yet here we we say that this is acceptable at the international level. This is what's going to save the day. No, there's a reason, I think, why we see God in his word in Psalm chapter 2 talk about how he sits in the heavens and he laughs. He holds the world in derision as the world comes together, the kings of the world, the, you know, the nations of the world coming together against his anointed, against his own. And he laughs. He laughs at him.
Yes, yes, that's right. Yeah, one of the.
I mean, it's a vain thing. It really is a vain thing.
Yes, it is. And yet we're marching down this road, Carl, because one of the things that folks don't take the time to think about, they just say, well, don't you think world peace is a wonderful thing? What they don't think about, Carl, is that in order to have world peace, you're going to have a world military force to enforce world peace, aren't you?
Absolutely, you will. You'll need a world military. You'll need a world policing system. You'll need a world legislative authority. You'll need a world tax. Guess what? All these things have been discussed. They've all been fleshed out to some degree. Now, does it mean it's going to necessarily happen the way that these organizations, these entities, these people believe it will be? Not necessarily. But the very fact that this is being discussed in rational circles, with sincerity, with a true belief, that itself should cause us to kind of, you know, take a good look at this and what is it that you're actually looking to achieve? Well, I think that quote from Gene Stapleton says it all. You're trying to achieve the salvation of humanity through a form of international politics. I don't want that kind of a world, Mike. No. I don't want that kind of a world where we have a world authority that dictates basically what is right and what is wrong and then has the power to be able to enforce that. And by the way, I don't really talk about it much in the book, but I do bring it in. I think at one point, one of my first kind of interactions with this thinking was back in 1995. 1995, the Canadian federal government, and I'm from Canada, Canadian federal government released their foreign affairs kind of like the direction they want to take the country that year. And it was a document. Their specific plan was a document on creating an international rapid reaction military force that be placed under the command and the control of the United Nations, with its own civilian police force and its own intelligence gathering capability, putting together a world tax to pay for all this. This is our foreign policy. Our national foreign policy. I got the documents simply by calling up our Department of Foreign Affairs back then and asking for them, and they were more than happy to send them because they were pushing this forward as being, you know, this is what Canada should be all about. We're going to be internationalist in our thinking. And how much more internationalist can you get than that?
Yes.
And so, you know, people say, well, this is conspiracy, this is crazy stuff. No. This is not conspiracy. This is business. This is big, big business.
That's a great point, Carl. Behind this push is corporatism. Is worldwide,
yeah, yes,
business interests, isn't it?
It's business interests. It's political interests. It's economic interests. And again, it's this idea that we will find our own way forward, and we can only do it by coming together, by uniting. It's a sense of oneness, a sense of creating a, you could look at this as a single world, a one world system.
And all religions are willing to come together, sit down at the table, discuss whatever differences they might have, and come to a amicable agreement, with the exception of Christianity. The only way,
yes,
that religions will ever be one is if they exclude Jesus Christ. Isn't that true?
Oh, no kidding. I've seen that at different interfaith events where Jesus Christ is the stumbling block, very much so the stumbling block.
Well, Carl, what else is going on with you? I know you got your office set up now, your research.
Yes.
Your books out and
You know, Mike, that's huge. And if it wasn't for those who are willing to support us and you know, to put themselves forward to make this happen, it wouldn't have happened. We've been very blessed that way. For about a year and a half, most of my research, most of my my files, my books, my documents were in long-term storage, and we weren't sure what was going to happen. We moved about a year and a half ago, and the situation I found myself in terms of setting up an office wasn't ideal. Neighbors were very gracious and gave me a room, a small room in their home that I could use, which was good as a temporary spot, but we needed something more long-term. And so the door opened up for us to purchase a 2,000 square foot building, almost all wide open, has a kitchen. It's a hallway, an older hall, but it works fantastically well. And so this show that we're doing right now, as I said before we began the taping of it, this show is our first attempt of pulling all the sound equipment together, and my son's here helping me make it all work so that you know, we got a little sound room we set up, a little studio area, we've got the room to do it. So We've been very blessed, and hopefully, once the book is out, we can utilize this resource, this space, in such a way that we can get this message out far and wide.
Yes, that would be great. So I don't want to put you on the spot, Carl, but I guess I'm going to anyway.
I like that.
I guess I'm going to anyway, brother. anticipated finish and release date. What do you think?
Oh, 2016, 2017. those years are already come and gone. Yeah. This is my third year working on the book, yes. But we're in the home stretch now. So I'm really hoping that by late spring, I think all the text end of it will be finalized. Most of the editing will be finalized by late spring. The cover design is basically done. Everything will be indexed. That's going to take up a little bit of time. We've got a 15-page bibliography in the back, got all that basically wrapped up. We're looking at late spring, early summer, when I think the project itself will be done, and we'll be sending the files off to begin the printing side of it, which that itself also will probably take 4 to 6 weeks. Yes. So, you know, early summer, midsummer.
Yep. Well,
we have something in hand.
I cannot wait to get my hands on a copy of it, and I'll be buying up some to give as gifts to friends that need to read it. I've been blessed, as I said earlier, to read almost all of it, and it is a fantastic, fantastic resource, folks. So as soon as it's out, you'll want to get it. Now Carl, I thought I saw that you were going to be at a conference soon. Are you scheduled to speak any place?
I'm scheduled to speak in October in Oklahoma. I was asked if I would be willing to do that again, and then I'm very thankful for that opportunity. I'll be speaking at a small conference in Brandon, Manitoba, towards the middle last half of March, and I think that's really all I've got on my plate right now.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to get you here to Lima and do a weekend conference. I think that is long past due. What do you think about that idea?
I would love to take a trip to your part of the world. That'd be fantastic.
You'd be able to stop and visit some friends on the way. I know you lived over in the Indianapolis area for a while.
No, I would really enjoy spending time with yourself and with your church congregation and getting to know the people in your part of the world.
Yes. Amen. Well, where can people keep up with you, Carl? I know you have your website, Forcing Change. Is that .com?
.org. It's not up yet, and that's been one of the things I've been remiss about, is putting my website back together, but trying to write a book, trying to, you know, do all these things at the same time. It's a bit of a juggling show. The best thing people can do right now is look me up on social media, Facebook and Twitter. I'm on both. I do have a blog, though I don't update it very often. Type my name into a search engine. You're going to see all kinds of stuff, of course, being search engines. It'll come up with everything under the sun, the good, the bad, and the ugly, because that's the nature of our internet world, isn't it? But Lord willing, in the next little while, hopefully the website will be back up and running.
Yes, amen. All right. Well, Carl, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. And folks, give Carl a shout-out on Twitter or Facebook. Tell him you appreciate his work and his research, and be sure and get that book when it's out. God bless you, Carl.
Thank you, Mike.
Soaring Eagle Radio is a production of Transforming Word Ministries and is released under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. You may subscribe to the show on iTunes, follow us on Facebook where you can discuss this episode, and follow Soaring Eagle Radio on Twitter at Soaring Eagle Rad, and listen to every episode from our website, www.soaringeagleradio.com. The opening audio montage collection was created by Micah 68 Productions. Visit them on the internet at www.mika68.com for more information. Friends, remember the Apostle Paul's admonition to the believers meeting in Rome. Therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. I'm your host, Mike Spaulding. Thank you for joining us today for this edition of Soaring Eagle Radio.
Thanks for tuning in today to the Soaring Eagle Radio program. For more information about the show, write us at Soaring Eagle Radio, 682 West Grand Avenue, Lima, Ohio, 45801. You may also contact Mike directly by email at the following address, pastormike@woh.rr.com. God bless you today as you seek him.